Excellent. Okay. So for this evening's talk, there is an idea which has only recently come into Buddhist teachings, which is really, really, really weird and strange. It has nothing to do with how the Buddha talked, and it's actually a little bit dangerous as well. So this evening, I am going to be talking about what many people in Buddhist circles in the West call interconnectedness. People keep on saying, we're all connected. And I come along and say, no way. Speak for yourself, I'm not connected. not all the time anyway. And it's one of those nice sounding ideas, which again, I was really quite surprised when I first heard about this. It wasn't around when I was a young Buddhist over in London many years ago, and it's not got any foundations in the teachings of the Buddha. But what actually is it, and why is it a big problem? And what it really is, it's pretty much the same as they used to say a long time ago, not that long ago, that the story of a butterfly flapping its wings over Tokyo and a storm happening over Perth, which we had actually last week. So have you heard that before? You know, the butterfly flapping its wings caused a storm somewhere else. So obviously that our storm last week was caused by a butterfly somewhere over in Tokyo. So I'm going to ask the Japanese government, can you please find that butterfly and stop him making a storm ever again? And of course it doesn't happen that way. And they also say you throw a pebble in the pond and the ripples go to every corner of that pond. I've seen that, and before the ripples go anywhere, a big boat comes past and disturbs all the ripples. It doesn't reach the end of the pond, not always. And when people said, no man is an island. Was that Shakespeare? I don't know whoever said that. But anyway, whoever said that, that is not always true. I did 6 months as an island when I went on a retreat. I never saw anybody. I was an island unto myself. And that's what the Buddha sometimes says. So are we really connected or not connected? And the point is that we have much of our life when we do connect with other people. We connect with this world, we connect with our problems and our past and our future, and that is called, in Buddhism, give it its proper name, attachment. Give it its right name. That's a bad word, we're not supposed to be attached. But that is also wrong. As a Buddhist, sometimes it's good to be attached. And I often say that if you're on the back of a motorbike coming here through busy traffic, please be attached until you get here. There are times to be attached and there's times to let go. There's times to be connected and there's times to disconnect. And so it can't always say we're always connected. And in fact, one of the reasons I'm saying this, I was reminded about a year and a half ago, I was over in Berkeley, San Francisco, and I was giving a talk, a Theravada monk, which was me, a Zen master, and one of the translators for His Holiness the Dalai Lama, a Tibetan monk. And we're all supposed to be having some sort of talk about Buddhism. And it was getting so boring, because everybody was agreeing with one another. And when everyone agrees with another, even if I, you know, not really sort of, you know, should do this, I always find something I can disagree with. Just to make it interesting. Even if I'm not really saying what I believe, just to make it, so stir it up a little bit. And so that's when I said, all this, we're all interconnected rubbish. I don't believe in that at all. And that's when these other two, those sort of hackles came up and said, yes, you are connected. Speak for yourself. No, I'm not. And it was a really lively debate from that point on. We actually got somewhere, we went deep into something. So again, what is that? Why do we want to be connected? Is the first thing to look at. And that sort of moving out to connect to another person, or as we have these days, that connection in Facebook, on Twitter, in all the other social media. What is actually pulling us out there to get connected to all these other people? Is that really necessary? It does cause you a lot of problems and suffering, a lot of busyness. And you see that. And sometimes I'm going through the airport. I travel in airports a lot. And you get people, and they're putting these trolleys behind them. And are they looking where they're going? No, they're looking at their mobile devices, connected. As someone once said, it will be a great app to have if on a corner of your smartphone you could actually see, in a corner even, where you're actually going. Save a lot of accidents. So, we're not really connected to reality. But why is that? Why do we always want to find out what somebody else is doing, what someone else is saying, what is happening in the world? What is the latest exchange rate for the dollar? What is the latest score on the cricket? Why do we always have to be connected like that? What is actually pushing us out to think we always must have friends, partners, families? What actually is that? And this is actually the nature of ourselves, to go out because we're afraid. We're afraid of just being ourselves, always worried and defining ourselves by other people. What they say about us, what they think about us, how much they love us, appreciate us, want to be with us. That is an addiction which causes that attachment. Always to be online, connected. This is just with that social media. Why can't we just be ourselves? Do you really need so many other people in your lives? Again, I prove to myself, you don't. Great to have other people. It's great to have nobody. Sometimes, can you spend a day by yourself, never talking to anybody, never even seeing anybody? People actually say that if they go in solitary confinement in prison, they say that's a punishment. For me, that's a retreat. And I'd love that. But it's also, I can go out there and talk to all of you and talk to you for hours and hours. But the point is, you don't have to be connected. You can disconnect. And that ability to disconnect and to feel comfortable, not be afraid of disconnecting, is one of the first things for our modern age. Disconnect for a while. On a day, have one day. Like they have Earth Hour, sometimes they ban traffic in the city one day a week. In Bali, they have one day a year where no cars are allowed to go anywhere on that island. No aircraft are allowed to land or take off. That they have a total engine-free day, one day a year. And you know, people love that. They don't need to have the cars and those conveniences. I want to have one day, telephone-free day. I know Telstra have almost come there with me because they have so many outages. But I want this to be voluntary rather than just incompetence. That's Telstra is our local phone company who have had lots of outages on internet and other stuff over the last, I don't know, year or so. But anyway, if it can be voluntary, just so you can find out what it's like not to be connected. And you find there's nothing to be afraid of. That President Obama is not going to call you. That Mr. Trump is not going to ask you advice on how to run his campaign. That your boyfriend is not going to sort of miss you for one day. He probably thinks, oh, thank goodness. the president of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia will not sort of think, no one's ringing me up or calling me about the problem with the city of Stirling. He'll probably think, oh, bliss, one day when I have nothing to worry about. Disconnecting is an important part of connecting. If you don't know the other side, you get consumed, attached, entangled in the world of connectivity, and you know nothing else, and you never have any freedom at all. And when the time comes when you have to disconnect, you're just afraid to do so. You're not used to it. You don't know how. So we learn from that. That's why when we have retreats, mobile phones all off. And people say, wow, I survive, and it's great. I don't need to be on the media. Now this is only a start with interconnectivity. Other times, you know, you have friends, you have partners, but it's the nature of life. Sometimes a partnership doesn't work. And you have to split, you have to separate, you have to disconnect from your old boyfriend, girlfriend. And so often just people don't know how to do that. Which means, you know, you're always a bit worried, oh, how is he, you know, when he's not staying with me, what's she up to? Look, if you're going to disconnect properly. You know, you don't need to be defined by your partner. You know, you are an independent being. You can be with them, but you can be by yourself. So that attachment, that addiction to always having to have somebody there for you is something which, again, causes a lot of problems in the relationship. When you know how to be alone, and you're happy being alone, then you know how to be with others. Otherwise, when you have to be with somebody, that addiction, that fear if they're going to go away, causes huge amounts of problems in relationships. Those of you who have relationships which, you know, are still growing, they're not that stable yet, how many of you are so afraid in case it doesn't work out? You know, terrified, you know, if this person leaves me, what am I going to do? Because you're not used to being by yourself. And you're afraid of that. You don't know how to disconnect when it's the time to disconnect and to connect when it's time to connect. In any relationship, you have to spend time by yourself as you have to spend time with each other. This is a beautiful balance in life, knowing how to connect and knowing how to disconnect when it's the time. And that's also, again, with your family. You know, sometimes, you know, some mothers, they can't let their children grow, even though their son is 50 years of age. You still have to worry about him and tell him what to do and ask if he's got a clean pair of underpants on. I can tell you that monks don't wear underpants. So my mother, I said, we don't wear any. But what if you get caught in an accident? None of your business, mother. Disconnect, come on. Why can't we do that? And a lot of time, again, is because we define our sense of being, who we are, by who we connect with. Our family gives us a sense of meaning and purpose. Our partner gives us an identity. And the number of people we also connect with in this world become who we think we are. And that's such a danger, because what happens if your partner, your relations, they get fed up with you? It's like so personal, it's like us being destroyed. Since we, you know, the person we thought we were doesn't exist anymore, it's being challenged. That's a big trouble. So that's one of the reasons why it's wonderful in a place like this. You can disconnect for a while. You can go on a retreat by yourself and leave your husband, your wife, your whole family back wherever they're doing and spend time by yourself. It's time disconnecting. And you always find, people actually tell me this, once you've disconnected, gone to a retreat for just a few days or a week, when you go back, you're a much better partner. One of the reasons is because you know you can be by yourself. So having the partner, having the close family, always doing the right thing by your parents, otherwise you lose your parents, it doesn't matter so much. If you do lose them, if you keep them, you know, you can cope either way. So it means it's not such an important issue. to be connected. It's great these days, I'm very happy for women. You don't need to have a partner anymore. When I grew up, any woman who didn't have a partner, there was something wrong with them. Called them old spinsters, on the shelf, as if it's something which means that there's something really, really wrong with you. You know, there's something when womanhood was given out, you got the sort of the short straw or something. And lots of people, they just had a partner because they thought they had to have one. And they just had a terrible life. Now you have the choice. You can if you want to, but you don't have to. Same with men, same with gays, same with lesbians, transgender. You can do what you want. You have this beautiful freedom to express who you are. And you don't always need to have someone. You can have many wonderful periods of your life just being you, in your own company, getting to know yourself and feeling free in your own company, not needing to connect with other people. So, ability to disconnect. Now that is also important because it means we can, you know, let relationships go when it's past their use-by date. Because not everything has its use-by date. Even that talk I gave the other day about chanting. Even chanting has its use-by date, which is one of the reasons I say when you come to the temple, you offer the dana, you have to come the week after and the week after that, because you know even good karma has its use-by date, and it's exhausted, so you have to top it up. That's the way I get more people to come to the temple. Coming once a year is not good enough. Your good karma has passed its use-by date, so you need to renew it again. But even some relationships have their use-by date. Friendships even have their use-by date. I know that sometimes what that really means is you learn how to, you can, I'm going to the greater part of interconnected, you can actually disconnect from the past sometimes. I don't know why so many people are so attached to the past, so connected to the past, they're defined by the past. Especially stupidly, of all things you should be able to let go of, is the bad experiences of the past. Now, it's not so bad keeping the good experience, the happy memories of the past, but for goodness sake, why are you so connected to all the pain, the difficulties, the traumas, the disappointment, you know, the squabbles of the past? And it's amazing that you don't have to be. That was a huge insight for me when I once realized I don't have to carry the past around anymore. I have a choice, as I was saying a few weeks ago. You have a choice. You don't need to keep defining yourself by what happened a long time ago. There's many people I've helped who've been in jail, criminals, prisoners. Once you walk out of that door, your crime has been atoned for. You've done your time. Why do you keep thinking about what you've done when you're a free person? And until a person can actually disconnect with that incredibly important thing which has actually put them in jail, they can never be free. Yes, they're out there, you know, working, doing a good job in so many different parts of their life, but they haven't disconnected with that terrible thing they've done which sent them to jail for so many years. They are not free. I remember just there was this poor fellow, as many of you may remember him, Andrew Mallard. And he was put in jail for I don't know how many years for something he never did. And eventually they found out he was set up. He shouldn't have been in jail. He was innocent. I remember counseling him here because he was really interested in Buddhism and came here quite a few times. Eventually I think he went overseas because he couldn't really disconnect from all that time in jail. And obviously all that terrible pain of being in jail for about 20 years or more for something he knew he did not do, but could not prove it. So the only way to be free is to be able to disconnect from that past. Now that fellow had a very bad time. And there's other people who had even worse times than that. You know, how they've been treated, what's happened. But a few of them show it is possible. You can disconnect from your past. It's called letting go. Forgiveness. Moving on. Realize, yes, it's happened, but I don't need to keep thinking about it. And this is the key to disconnecting, to be able to get some more understanding, and with that understanding, more, you know, for want of a better word, control over your thinking process. For most human beings, your thinking process is totally out of control. Thoughts come up, and thoughts torture you, and cause you so much difficulty and problems, and lack of freedom, lack of happiness, and you don't know how to basically control them and work with them, and even sometimes just let them go. And as a monk, it's just so easy for me to do that because I've done all my training. And you can want to think, you do think. If you don't want to, you can stop it. You've found that switch in the human brain to actually to stop. So these unwanted thoughts, to disconnect that thinking process. And also, if you want to think, to actually to move that thinking process into something more positive and useful. Because look, just keeping on contemplating, allow these thoughts about what your partner did to you, what your parents did to you, what the government did to you, what something did to you. If you keep on just cultivating that, you cultivate this connection to the bad stuff of your past. You know, sometimes I gave the simile that, oh, people have these photo albums. And maybe these days you have just have on your smartphone. But in those days when you had albums, books, you'd always put these really nice photographs in the books. You'd have the photographs displayed in your house. Now, the time when you graduated from college in this stupid uniform with this crazy hat on it, or throwing your hat up into the air and so on. You have that photograph of getting your degree from some, I don't know, VIP. You have the photograph of your marriage ceremony. That's always there. Have your photograph on holiday in this beautiful resort. You have the photographs of your kids' birthdays or whatever. All these wonderful photographs which bring back great memories. I got some of these old, I still got a couple of these photographs. I got a photograph, I think I still got it, of, I've got it on me and some Arabs by the pyramids in Egypt. Don't know who those Arabs were, just, but you know, reminds me of some people I've befriended, you know, by the pyramids in Egypt. Brings back happy memories, you know, of the time I spent over there as a kid. Me, oh, there's some other photographs I hope no one ever finds because they're very embarrassing. Climbing into cottage with our girlfriends late at night. Someone got that. That would really embarrass me. But we have all these old photographs. But you never ever see in people's photo albums all the nasty experiences. You don't. If you did take a photograph of when you got stopped by the police and fined, put that in your book. Do you know, at the time when you failed the exam or you're down there struggling to pass the exam, you don't have a photograph of that. Or that, does anyone have a photograph of their divorce? Marriage, yes, not the divorce. Have you ever seen, why do we keep those photographs? It's because at least we're smart enough to know that those are useful. We can connect with those and they give us some happiness. But why do we keep connecting with the bad stuff? In fact, usually if it was a real photograph, and if it didn't turn out right, or it was embarrassing, you know, it showed you in a bad light, you would delete it. If it was in a book, you'd throw it away and burn it. Why can't we do that with the photographs in our mind? Or those terrible, terrible things which happened to us. The things which, you know, you are embarrassed about, can't we delete those? And we can if we know we don't have to be connected. We can disconnect if we want to. And it's not that hard a thing to do. Once you know you can, then you learn how to do it. If you think you can't do it, you never even explore where that choice is. You do it with a few things first of all, a few minor things, move on to bigger things, and eventually then move on to the whole lot. Your past, I sometimes use this metaphor, is like you climbing up a mountain, dragging a huge heavy sled behind you through the snow. Another heavy sled is all of your past. And you're dragging it through this life, which means you can't make much progress. And it's so tiring dragging your past behind you. And after a while, you realize I don't have to do this. And you'd literally just untie the rope. You let the past go down the mountain. Of course, that's environmentally not a good idea, but you know, this is only a metaphor, okay? So don't pick it apart. It's a beautiful thing to do. You just let it go. And you realize then you've got no weight in your life. You can move forward. You can dance into the future. You can jog into the future. Because all that heavy stuff which has been stopping you, restricting you, is gone. When you fail something, how many people they fail, say, oh, I'm terrible, I can't do this anymore, I made a mistake, I've failed the exam, I've just messed up my relationship, I've got sacked from my job. How many people carry that around so much, they think they're a failure, which means they can't jump forward into life. They're always connected with their past mistakes. So, you can let that go. That type of connectedness is attachment. And you notice how that hurts. Somebody said something bad to you. Your best friend let you down. Yes, so what? That is life. People do let you down. I've let other people down. We didn't mean it. We got stuck in the traffic. We couldn't get there in time. I forgot. Because sometimes that happens. When you get over 60, please use that excuse. So you get out of a lot of problems when you say, oh, sorry, I forgot, I'm over 60. Say, oh, yeah, okay, fair enough. So whatever, you can actually let go of that past, and it means that you are free to do much better in the future, to learn, to grow, and so you don't feel like you're carrying this heavy weight behind you. And even all the good memories as well. Because sometimes if ever I give a talk and it worked, I must forget it. Otherwise, I'll try and repeat that talk the next week or two, and it won't be the same. You cannot repeat wonderful occasions. You've had a lovely day with your partner, you've gone to your favorite restaurant, okay, I'm going to go there again next week. It will never be the same. In fact, you'll stuff up. Let the good things go as well. So you can be free just to be in this present moment. Then life becomes really wonderful, free, successful, and happy. Don't try and repeat the happy moments of the past. It never works. You have to let that go too, so you can be totally free, disconnected. And also disconnect from the future. Mr. Trump is going to be the President of the United States. Ah! It's the end of the world! It's not going to be the end of the world. I don't know what will happen, but I always make do with something, I don't care. But whatever happens is that you don't need to connect to the future too much. If you do, whatever you're afraid of, it may happen. This is the other part. When you can let go of things and don't connect, it means that you can leave the world alone and it does much better without you. Honestly. By which I mean that when you don't get involved, when you don't try and change things, you let things flow, rather than trying to make things happen, you find things go much better. There's so many examples of that. Now, if you want to sort of regenerate a part of the forest, the best way, and I've been told this a long time ago, and this makes so much sense to me, if you want to regenerate a part of the forest, fence it off and don't let anybody in there. It regenerates much better by itself if you can just leave it alone. The best way to most things, if the best way to heal your body, you can just leave it alone sometimes. Put a bandage on it and leave it alone, instead of just looking at it, oh, that's no good. Maybe a bit of ointment on, so put some ointment and put it back on again. No, maybe that's not the right ointment, we're getting some other ointment. No, maybe I should sort of put a more sterile bandage on. You keep messing it about, which no wonder it doesn't work. So sometimes just leaving things alone, instead of making them happy, means you're not causing or creating the problems in this world. This is the other thing which I know from my meditation, how much we create the problems in our future through fear. What we're afraid of, we make happen. We bring it on, simply because we just think about it. We think about it. I think many people are so afraid that Donald Trump was going to get the Republican nomination, and now it's happened. It's your fault. You made it happen, okay? Even climate change. Who made climate change happen? I'm going to be really... You did, by being afraid. Interesting spin on all of this. Lack of positive emotions, energies. Because that's sometimes what happens. So anyway, that's another thing. I'm going to get some flack from that. And these are not things I want you to believe, not things actually to trust, but actually look at those things. How we create our world. It's so obvious to me. I've seen it so many times. You know, the stories of me going to hospitals and just talking to people and then making them believe they're going to get better. And they do get better. You know, even myself, I'm in such good health because I keep talking to myself, you're going to be okay, Ajahn Brahm, you're healthy. And I convince myself so much I am healthy. Have you ever seen hypnosis work like that? People who are actually almost blind and they can actually see without the glasses under hypnosis. People who, you know, physically they can't lift their hand up, but they can on hypnosis. How much is that power of the mind creates stuff? And it's actually much more than you think. Huge amount. So, if you disconnect from the thinking especially, it's amazing just how much powerful things we can create in this world. And it's also we can disconnect from this terrible worries which we have in life. Sometimes a simile which, you know, to make this a bit more visual, what actually disconnecting really is, what is lack of attachment. The old simile, which is that when I was 18-year-old, type of gap year, it was only because I was a whiz kid and I got my scholarship to go to Cambridge when I was only 17, so I had a whole 9 months, nothing to do. Had my nice university all lined up, got a job, selling encyclopedias actually, stupid job. But anyway, made a bit of money and then traveled to the United States, bored of the United States, just like any other place. Central America, jungles. I was always attracted to jungles. So I went over there, and you know, it's like a third world country, some indigenous culture, something different than what I grew up with. And this was really indigenous culture, 1969. Going down this river Indiana Jones. And it was like that. There's people going in the opposite direction in dugout canoes, totally without clothes, jungles all over the place. And just, I remember just going to this, I'm just reminiscing now, going to this restaurant by the side of the river, no roads anywhere, no cars or traffic. The only way you can get to it was by boats. And all they had there was incredibly sweet, strong black coffee, you know, tortilla, which was just made out of corn, and black beans. Absolutely delicious. Dirty, filthy. If the City of Stirling Health Department saw it, they'd close it down straight away. Totally unhygienic, but delicious. And I just remember that, just so simple but basic, and just, I could eat that all day. And a coffee, that would just make your eyeballs explode. But it was nice. And this was this old culture of those days. And just everything was made for themselves. And even the sugar, they just had some sugar cane around the back. So everything was just indigenous. And it was a wonderful time. But I went to that part because I was traveling through the jungle to go to these big pyramids in Tikal, in the old Mayan civilization. Because something about that, I saw it in a book in a library, and I thought, I want to go there. And being 18, exploring. So I went there. And this is actually where I didn't know what they were there for. Huge monuments in the middle of the jungle, not nowhere, no roads or anything. An ancient civilization which had totally disappeared. No one knew why. It disappeared before the Spanish came in, so they just found these things as well. No one knew what they were for. And no security guards. No restaurants, no one to stop you. So I just walked up the first pyramid. And it's a long way up. Even a fit 18-year-old, it was really a long way up. But you got to the top there. And that was incredible, at the top of one of those pyramids. It was nothing mystical. It was obvious to me what they were there for. This is an old story. I told it many times before, but this is important. When I got to the top of that pyramid, I was above the tree line of the jungle. You could see forever on the top there. You could see all over, just for miles and miles and miles. I was disentangled from the jungle. I disconnected. In the jungle, you could only see so far in front of you. Now I could see to infinity with nothing between me and the infinite. I was not entangled anymore, not caught up. The metaphor was just so obvious when you were there experiencing it. Because for days I'd been in a jungle, traveling there. If you travel in an aircraft, you never get this experience. If you travel too fast, of course you'd miss it, because for 3 or 4 days, traveling in a jungle, I've been in a jungle, used to the jungle, entangled in all of this greenery, and now you're up above, apart, separated, disconnected. And only from that point of disconnection could you actually see the whole jungle and get a feel for it. You know, this was way, way before Google Maps. And actually, that's what it was like. You can see all the places, all the roads, well, not roads, they're just little tracks through the jungle, and the rivers and the lakes and everything from above. I realized what that was there for. Similarly, when ancient culture would take people up there to show them what connection is and disconnection is. And once you've disconnected, once you're apart, once you're separated, you get an idea of what's going on. Meaning of life, what you're here for, why you have relationships, why they work sometimes, why they don't, what you're working for, what you have a Buddhist society for, what you're meditating for, what you love for, why you get upset sometimes. We're so closed in this jungle called our life, we're so entangled, we don't know how to disconnect. And just move up a bit, move apart, disconnect, and then you get incredible perspective. So disconnection is important. It's called detachment. It's the old simile in Buddhism. It's an old simile of moving up into the mountain, meditating, disconnecting, getting insight, enlightenment, wisdom, and then coming back down the mountain to help and to teach. That wonderful balance, disconnecting so you can connect. Connecting for a while until you need to disconnect and have time out for a while. Is so important. Otherwise, when we do connect to each other, we just create more problems for each other. We connect in a bad way, in a stupid way, in a dysfunctional way, causing more pain and misery for one another. When you go up onto that mountain, when you do disconnect from the past, from thinking, from the future, from having to be with someone, for having to find out about this news or that news, it just... Look, I'm going to say this now so no one asks me again. I've been telling that story for years now about the monastery in Ladakh, where the person, Australian, found his way there, the most beautiful sound. He couldn't find out what it was. And then he went to that abbot and said, "What was a beautiful sound?" He said, "I can't tell you because you're not a monk. It's in one of my books. If you haven't heard it now, you must have lost your memory because I say it so many times." And then he became a monk after a couple of years, and he took him through these four doors, the wooden door, the iron door, the silver door, the gold door, to find out what was the cause of this most beautiful, because only monks can know this. That's why he became a monk, to find it out. And then I tell that story, and then at the very end, the punchline is, people say, "Well, what was that wonderful noise, the most beautiful sound in the world?" And I say, "I can't tell you because you're not monks." And now, too many people have emailed me, sent me letters, "Ajahn Brahm, where is that monastery?" It doesn't exist. And he said, "Well, we know you would say that, but where really is it?" It's just a metaphor, a story to say, why do you have to know? Now that's the most important part of that story. Why is it we always have to know? That sort of addiction. And that's what I'm pointing out. And the wonderful thing is you can disconnect. You don't have to know. That was such a beautiful thing to me when I realized I don't need to know every sutta which the Buddha ever taught. I can be an expert on Buddhism without knowing everything. I'm an expert on not having to know. You can disconnect from knowledge. Why do you always have to know everything? Why do you always have to be right? So, if you want to solve a lot of problems in life, just admit straight away you're wrong. Imagine what that'd be like in your marriage. When, before even an argument started, you say, yeah, I'm wrong. It will save a lot of time. If you eventually come to that, you know, having to say that after, you know, about an hour or two of marital discord, but you know, get it over and done with straight away. Just say, okay, I'm wrong. They have a much more peaceful life. You do something more interesting rather than arguing. But why do we always have to be attached to being right? Disconnect from rightness. And then you can be free. See, there's so many things we can disconnect from. So when people say everything is interconnected, I thought, oh my goodness, if that was the case, we'd no end of suffering. Because you can disconnect, because you can let go. Because that freedom is something which Buddhism points to, encourages. Freedom. Not being connected, but freedom. Freedom to be connected or disconnected, whichever one of those two you want. Switching from one to the other. Turning on your laptop and turning off again. And not worrying when it's turned off, what's happening. When you need to, no, you can turn it on again. You can be with another person, you can be by yourself. You don't have to be either. Whichever way life gives you, you can enjoy whichever. And in the end, when you have to disconnect from this life, bye-bye all my friends and relations, we've had a wonderful time. Bye-bye, and you can totally disconnect and delete and be free. Shut down. Not just to reboot, but to shut down. Once and forever, peace at last. Thank you very much. Very good. Okay, now you've got this connection to deal with. Here we go. Now this is the usual one. Am I connected to the universe, or we all are universe as one? No, you are connected to the universe when you want to be. You can disconnect any time you decide. You have that freedom. If you were connected to the universe would be a prison for you. Or, we all are universe as one. If you are one, which means you are one with Donald Trump, you are one with Pol Pot, you're one with Adolf Hitler. Do you want to be one with all those people as well? We can choose to be together. Part of it is, yes, we are together. Part of it is you're alone. You are an island to yourself, said the Buddha. You're not part of everything. You can be, you cannot be. You have the choice. To have kindness for others, don't you have to connect? Ha 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 ha. You have to connect with yourself as well to know what kindness is. If you're always connecting to others, you've missed it. To learn how to really empathize with somebody else, you have to be able to empathize with yourself as well. Always connecting to others is not kind. Please do not always connect to me by emailing me, phoning me, lighting up after the talk, ask me your questions. I need to disconnect as well. So if you're going to be kind to me, disconnect. Is it possible with the concept of interconnectedness that this may be a spin-off from impermanence? If it really was impermanence, you would be able to stop connectiveness. Exactly what I've been saying. Impermanence means things change. They're not always the same. You can connect and you can disconnect and you can connect again. That's what impermanence means. If it's always connected, then it's permanent. It's always there and then you're stuffed. If you always have to be one with the universe, then you're stuffed again. It's permanent. It's forever. So I don't want to be one with the universe forever. I've been here long enough. I want out. It's like being one with a prison. No way. So, release, freedom. Yes, we start by being many. Then we come to oneness, but that's not the end. Then we come to the final zero, nothing. That is the end. And that's why I always praise greater than the one, which many people say is God, is the nothing. And that was actually even confirmed to me about a year ago by a Christian priest. Only about 6 months ago, because this was just before I went over to Malaysia for the end of the year retreat in December. This Christian priest came up to me and he said, "Ajahn Brahm, you have to admit nothing is better than God." And I said, "Yes, I agree. Nothing is much higher than the one." And he said, "That's not what I meant, that's not what I meant." That's what I meant though. Nothing. Emptiness. Zero. Zero is the most beautiful number. Zero is like round, it's complete. And zero is, if you let the zero sign, it's totally round. It is like love, you know, in tennis. No, it's the zero, and in the middle, you've got the line on the outside, it actually meets, it's got no beginning and end, the zero sign. One, it starts somewhere and ends somewhere. One is like, you know, the idea of a universe, what I said, like flat time, it has beginnings and end, the number one. But zero, no beginning, no end, with a total emptiness inside. You go inside the zero sign, and you're in this beautiful space. Wow, that's so absolutely deep. One is not deep at all. So, the zero, that is the best symbol. That's where all the numbers end. And you multiply something by zero, still stays a zero. Divide it by zero, and you get the infinite, boundless. Zero is the coolest number in the whole mathematical list of numbers. Zero rocks. Okay, anyway, I think I've gone far enough on that one. Any questions from the audience here? I didn't actually mention the last one thing about zero and nothing and nobody's. I saw this, it's a great t-shirt, one of the great quotes. I saw this from a t-shirt. Got a lot of wisdom comes from t-shirts. The first line is, "Nobody is perfect." Second line, "I'm a nobody." Third line, "Therefore I'm perfect." Oh, that's really, really cool. If you're a somebody, you're not perfect. When you're a nobody, when you disappear, when you disconnect, then you are perfect. Da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. Okay, enough. So let's pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and then you can come and connect to me and disturb me and annoy me with your questions and whatever. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. And please, if you've got a few coins or dollars or something, put it in the little box in the back for the people who are really suffering in Sri Lanka because of the floods. It'd be very helpful. And I'll make sure that nothing is wasted.